I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Is It Just Me? With me, James Williams, and the lovely...
Oh, that's me. I think I'm the lovely one. I'm Jo Elfman.
You're always lovely,
oh,
Jo.
Oh, shut up.
And you join us today on a very sunny day when we're actually basking in the beautiful daylight in a sort of swish Notting Hill apartment in the company of... Well, a very familiar face to us, Jo.
Sorry, who are you again?
Have I been gone that long?
Yes, you have.
Well, quickly, we should say, obviously, you know, TV presenter, radio presenter extraordinaire turned Hollywood actress... Jameela Jamil joins us.
Hello.
Hello, Jameela. Hello. Of course I know. You're a really big deal now, right?
That's a lie.
She's
that's
still talking to us.
It's slander. True, though.
Look, she's so... still talking to us. No, no, we love her for that.
Don't take this away from me, because I have got so many cred points in my house now, because I have a friend who's on my daughter's favourite TV show.
Is it her favourite TV show?
Absolutely.
Oh my God, that's absolutely.
You've got to say hello to Evie.
I will. Hello, Evie. Hello, Evie.
Well, she's actually not allowed to listen.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, but yeah. You're too rude.
Oh, yeah. No, but Jameela Jamil, hello and welcome, and thank you for having us in your lovely apartment today.
No, thanks so much for coming over.
You're
feel
very
like
jet-lagged.
A right diva. Like,
oh no,
I'm asking you to come here, but I am like I'm swimming through mud right now in my brain because it's like 8 hour time difference. So I've just gotten off a plane from Los Angeles.
And rushed to do the Is It Just Me podcast.
She couldn't wait.
I flew here just for this. Yeah, yeah.
What are you doing here?
I ask myself that every day. I am here because my boyfriend is working here at the moment, and so I'm here to be his wag, because he's my wag when I'm filming, and so we wag each other. That's not a euphemism, just to be very clear.
Mutual wagging.
Couple who wag each other.
Stay together, yeah. And so I'm just here for that, but I could leave at any moment for work because I might be doing my first movie.
That's so awesome.
Thank you. I can't tell you anything about it, but it's very exciting. It might not happen because in Hollywood some things never do, but I'm literally currently waiting by my phone with a packed suitcase where I might need to go. It's the weird nature of this business, which I'm not used to.
Can we just vouch for that as well? Because I think a lot of the time, some people say, oh, I can't talk about my next thing, because, you know, and they try to play this sort of, you know, cards close to their chest thing. But you've just been telling us, the nature of Hollywood actually is not as simple and cut and dried as people think it is, right?
Exactly, and people get fired at the last second, or films get cancelled at the last second, or someone's, like, molested someone, and then it comes out now. Like, that's genuinely something that happens all the time. There was that movie, All the Money in the World, where Kevin Spacey was in it, and then all of this Kevin Spacey stuff came out. And suddenly they had to either can a movie that cost like $140 million or they had to spend $10 million reshooting it with Christopher Plummer.
Mm. On the bright side, there was a time not that long ago when somebody molesting somebody was not a big deal at all, and we carried on. Yeah. And could you just please shut up and sign this?
Exactly.
True.
Yeah.
But I'm not complaining about it. I'm just showing that, especially right now, you know, it's a time of like true uncertainty. So there's just no point me going on and on about a job that I might end up not doing.
Jameela, this is so you. This is, I think a lot of this is you always waiting for the thing to go wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm English.
But you are the queen of self-deprecation as well, I think. Yeah. And I mean, you do need to own the fact. Anyone who's listening, who hasn't watched The Good Place, you need to rectify that wrong immediately. It's so, so good.
It's a great show.
And you are a revelation in it, if you don't mind me saying.
Like, thank you.
Well, no disrespect, but I think, you know, we all know you from T4, we know you from Radio 1, mm-hmm. and suddenly out of nowhere you pop up on this TV show and you're up against some serious heavyweights, right? You're up against, well, not up against, but, you know, starring alongside Ted Danson and
Kristen Bell.
Exactly, and you're not more than holding your own, you're actually stealing pretty much every scene from underneath them, I would
That's
say.
That's a lie. But
it goes very
exactly.
No, but it's...
You are absolutely hilarious in The Good Place.
Thank you, that's very kind. I've never been more afraid in my life than doing this show. It was absolutely terrifying, but it's been so much fun, and it's so fun to have to up my game. It's so nice to have that challenge and to have that kind of pressure. I do enjoy finding out where my flaws are and what my strengths are and building and just trying not to just literally shit myself.
Which is always a good rule to live by.
Yeah, also American Craft Services, which is this 20-foot table of snacks that they have on set, and my delicate little English stomach had never known what corn syrup was, and corn syrup's in everything. You have to buy sugar-free bread to get bread that doesn't have sugar in it in America, and so it's just all this shit is just laid out everywhere, and it's delicious. And you on set 16 hours a day, you're tired, you're bored, you're eating constantly, and the wind is a the trap.
It's
wind
not about farting in front of Ted Danson, is it?
No, exactly. That was actually for the first season. That was my anxiety. Was more that I was going to fart in front of Kristen Bell because she's small. She's 5'1". She's nearer my asshole than I am. She's she's at eye level with my bum hole.
That could and so, be her Me Too story.
Yeah,
if you
that's
fart
it.
In her face.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Just gas poisoning from Jameela Jamil. And so, my fear that she would smell something I was putting out overrode my fear of being a bad actress, and weirdly that carried me through season one. Was just a terrible digestive system. This season two I didn't touch craft services.
And peppermint tablets, can I recommend?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. But also my weight was fluctuating in a way that I've never had before because of the sugar and the salt in the food.
It is quite weird because you always think of LA.
I looked like Pablo Escobar by the fucking finale. It was unbelievable. It was is this a good place? Is this Narcos? It's fine. I don't mind that. But it was just more my wardrobe situation was a nightmare.
But it is interesting because I've never thought about it before. But it is a strange situation because you always think of LA being the sort of the land of the clean eating and, you know, the sort of healthy food
not
stuff.
Not on a film set.
No, but actually not on any photo shoot I've been on. It's always remarkably kind of stodgy and sweet and full of all that kind of sugary crap, really.
It's just shit. But
they
gorgeous
love sugar, the
shit.
Americans. And they love, even when you think, oh, I'm going to have a salad, and it comes and it's the size of four plates of salad here.
And covered in mayonnaise.
And cheese.
Wonderful.
But for those who haven't actually seen the show, can you sort of quickly sort of sum up what The Good Place is all about?
The Good Place is a wonderful comedy from Mike Schur, who's the man who made The Office and he made Parks and Recreation. And it's starring Kristen Bell.
Who's that man?
Yeah. He's a new up-and-comer.
He needs a hit, I think.
And it's about Kristen Bell's character. Her name is Eleanor, and she's this terrible woman who wakes up one day and she realises she's dead and she's in heaven, essentially. It's like our version of heaven in The Good Place. But she's this horrible person and has no idea how she's managed to get there. It turns out there's been a mix-up in the system, and now she has to not let anyone know that she is the wrong person to be in the right place. And so that's terribly worded.
But it's... I'm
saying is that she's a terrible person who's in a place full of wonderful people. If the game is up, then she'll be sent right back down to hell where she belongs. So it's her journey in trying to actually become a good enough person to warrant her place in The Good Place. And we are all of her neighbours. I play a neighbour from hell, the sort of smug bitch next door. And I, you know, her and my character, we trigger each other. We fight constantly. We constantly bring up each other's insecurities. And it's all these different characters around her who she's learning from, but also constantly challenging in an attempt to actually become good. It's a show about morality, about what actually makes you a good person.
Yeah.
Just doing the right thing with the wrong motivations isn't enough.
But what I like about it is it's also quite dark in places, and it's not, you know, it's on the edge quite a few times. It's not, I think, because when you think it's a primetime TV show in the States, obviously it's on Netflix over here, isn't it? But I think it does, it's not afraid to sort of take a few risks as well, and it's actually genuinely very, very, very funny.
Oh, sure. And also, there's something really genius about the way that we managed to get bad language in, cocaine and masturbation jokes, and all that go over the head of children. So we have 6-year-olds who are fans, we have 25-year-olds who are fans, we've got 60-year-olds who are fans. It kind of reaches, there's something for everyone in it, and you can all watch it together, and it reaches different people on different levels.
It's like American Panto.
No, exactly. But it's also so uncondescending to the American public, because so many American TV shows nowadays they water everything down. They sort of dilute it because they're trying to not challenge anyone. And I think what I love about Mike's show, and I love about NBC for putting this on the air, a show in which we talk about philosophers like Kant and Kierkegaard and stuff, and then we have cocaine and masturbation jokes, is the fact that they don't underestimate the world. They don't underestimate the public, and they know that people can handle a bit of humour, a bit of edge. It's quite a bitchy show. We're really rude about celebrities. My character is especially really rude.
Well, she's a fabulous name dropper. Yes. Isn't she?
Oh my god, the worst, the absolute worst.
What happens then when you come face to face with people you've actually had to name drop or sort of badmouth on the show? Has that ever happened so far?
Yeah, I met Beyonce, who told me that she watches the show.
Oh, fantastic!
Oh my god. Well, you can now die happy, right?
I know. No, yeah, that's it. That's it. It's game over for me. By the way, your computer is now loading your photos, and I'm so scared I'm going to see a picture of your dick.
No, don't worry.
There we go.
Oh my god. that would be something.
That just came up, and I was
That would be the bad place.
It's
bad
a mixture
place.
Of both, yeah. Joe. So I met her, and I felt instantly mortified because all my character does is name drop Beyonce, and how like she's my—I refer to her constantly as my best friend. So I sort of instantly apologising to her, but she's extremely gracious and sweet. But how weird.
I think it's that thing, if you build it, it will come. So if you keep saying it, she'll become your best friend.
Yeah, eventually. What, life will imitate art, and I'll really date Leonardo DiCaprio, exactly. And Baz Luhrmann will throw glitter all over me.
If you put it out there into the universe, it will come back at you tenfold.
It's quite funny to see what... I think playing an English person in an American comedy, it's always really funny to see what Americans think we are.
Yes.
And they were very cool about letting me, like, sort of... anglify her make her as passive aggressive as we are, and like just add those little kind of like bitchy London edges
and that sort of pseudo poshness.
Oh yeah, they all so disgustingly posh in the show, but it's like they wanted like a kind of like slightly panto kind of like Grace Kelly type figure, and those people do exist. They just all live in Chelsea. We've met those people.
I've DJed
for those people when I've DJed for like Ugg Boots or something. They've all turned up with their like ridiculous names.
But your character Tahani, and this is the genius of it as well, and this is what you have to bring to as an actor, is she's also got, she does have a moral centre, she does have a soul, and as the as it goes on, you get to understand why she is the way she is.
And she's not one note, exactly.
Yeah.
And I love that about her.
Well, I think Mike Schur is wonderful at like building empathy, like throughout all of his programmes, everything you will see is a consistent like empathy, which is something that we could all stand to have a bit more of, which is that there's no such thing often, maybe not no such thing, but it's very rare that you have someone who's just bad. It's normally someone sad who acts out in bad ways. You know, everyone who's arrogant or in, like all the things that make people the most intolerable you could find them, it normally comes from something that's really easy to explain, like a shitty parent, or they were bullied at school, or they were humiliated and dumped and cheated on or something like that. These mannerisms that we have that suck always come from some kind of injury. No one's just born that way. And so I think that there's a beauty to the fact that you meet her, you hate her. I hated her. I hate playing her at first. Mm. So I was just like, I cannot stand this woman. And then I started to learn her backstory and I started to love her. And slowly but surely, people have started to love her. And
absolutely.
That's really cool.
No.
Now tell me, because I remember the last time you did this podcast when it was a glamour podcast and you hadn't filmed a scene yet.
Yeah.
But I was so excited for you because I knew Mike Schur. I was saying, my God, Ted Danson's in this. This is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
What? Tell me what it was like.
I just fart my way to success.
God, honest to God. I spent my entire life going, no, Jamila, that's not why. No. But it's because you're very, very good at what you do. Oh, but what was it like your first day on set? How did that feel? How did you overcome any...
The whole first season was so surreal. I actually didn't process it. I was overly cool as a cucumber to the point where I think people took it as ambivalence, where I was just like, you're right, mate. Hiya, Ted. You're right, Kristen. Like, just very, like, Russell Branded my way through it. I was, like, just Max Cash, like, lying down in between takes. Just sort of, it just didn't hit me what was happening. Sorry, the police are coming. They found out I'm here. Shit.
This is not a drill.
And so I actually was cool as a cucumber. I don't really remember it, and it just sort of, I think I was in shock as to what was really happening. And then I remember we shot the finale, and the finale is so, like, the end of season one alone is worth watching the entire series for.
Agreed.
It's so, so good.
Yeah.
But because Ted Danson's so incredible in it. But we were there, we shot that big final scene as the last scene that we were filming in the whole show, which is so lucky to ever get to do that because you normally shoot things out of sequence.
Right.
So it was a real sense of finality. And, you know, we didn't know if we'd be coming back for a second season. So I was like, all right, guys, thanks for having me. Thanks for not firing me. Bye. Bye, Ted. Bye, everyone. And I like just sort of strolled on out, cool as a cucumber. And then as I was walking out, walking through the set of Universal, where like Friends was filmed, Jurassic Park was filmed, Back to the Future, everything through these sets, on my little golf buggy, like driving towards the gate, it just all hit me all at once after 5 months of filming. And I sobbed and I sobbed and I sobbed and I couldn't believe what just happened. And also, like, not to become like a tearjerker, but when I was 17, I got hit by a car and I damaged my back so badly. I didn't walk for like over a year. Yeah. And I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't have any friends. Like, I didn't have a support system in that time, really, to keep me company day to day. And I was missing my teens, everything. And so all I did all day was watch American sitcoms. And they kept me alive. And they taught me everything that I wasn't learning outside. Mm. And it was stuff like Cheers with Ted Danson. Yeah. Or it was Frasier. Or it was Friends. And day and night, I would watch these things. And they were such a source of comfort. I would say that I'd go so far as to say that they saved my life and my sanity at that time. And to know that I was now in one of those shows, the way that the world would come full circle. If you told that girl who was on a Zimmer frame that one day I'd be acting alongside those people I
used
to watch.
It's like a Hollywood movie in itself.
It was too much. It was just too much. And it wasn't like dignified like actress tears. I was like... My boyfriend thought I'd been fired when he picked me up at the gate.
Have you ever spoken about that to Ted Danson?
No. No, I don't want to freak him. I mean, I don't know if he'll listen to this, but
of course
I don't want to freak him out.
He's a big fan of the show.
Yeah, he does listen every week.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Jamila?
He keeps begging to be on.
But I know, he's such a beg. no, but I don't want to make him feel like Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's so cool and normal. Yeah. He just wants to be treated like, you know, as one of the guys.
Yeah.
He's extremely cute.
I think he'd love it though. It's a very sweet story, and it's, you know,
it was just too much. Like, acting opposite his face is still just like that. You can't think of your lines. All you're thinking is Jesus. That's Ted Danson. Ted fucking Danson standing right there. Look at him being amazing. Oh my god, the scene is so good. He's so good. Like, that's my internal monologue. It's disgusting. I can never tell anyone like what a big fan I am of them because I'm creepy enough as
but
it is.
It's also a really great ensemble. The best thing I can say is, you know, I think the words, you know, binge watch are bandied around a lot. And I'll honestly tell you, I watch, and it's the perfect length. Each episode's about 20-25 minutes
long.
It's
so sweet that you watch this. This blows my mind.
No, honestly, I put it on and I literally binged the whole first season in one day. Oh. So honestly, if you're listening, you haven't watched it, check it out at The Good Place because it's really, really good. It's the return of a good, finally a good US sitcom, I feel. Like,
yeah, it is a really good show. And honestly, like, because I'm not in a lot of it, I get to watch it as a fan, and I'm genuinely a fan of this show. I'm very proud to be a part of it. I feel very lucky.
You should be.
It's awesome.
I feel very lucky.
Well, now, enough of nice things. Let's go on to ranting about things, shall we?
Yeah, because
obviously,
The Good Place. Exactly. Talk about me.
Let's get to some bad places.
Say hello to Lucinda, who stopped me in Topshop yesterday.
Oh yeah!
I mean, God, I felt like a celebrity.
Oh yeah, what she was like telling you that much. She loves your
podcast. She loved the show. Yeah.
Yes, but to say
we love you for that.
I told you I was going to say hi, and I've done it. Thank you for listening. And we also want to say a big hi to Rachel, who has emailed us at isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com to say hi, Joe James. I'm a big fan of the Is It Just Me podcast. In fact, it's the only podcast I listen to. What's the only one you need, Rachel?
Yes.
Don't
Good
bother
girl.
With any of the other crap out there. And I'd love if you could discuss whether it's just me who thinks that we don't always have to go outside of our comfort zones to achieve great things.
Interesting. Yes. Mm-hmm. This one's a good one for you, I think, Jamila, because you're somebody who's, you know, who knew that acting was a new string to your bow.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it really depends. We've all got different comfort zones. We've all got different, you know, layers of what we find, you know, some of us are more anxious and neurotic and self-deprecating than others. So I think I agree with her. Maybe you don't have to go outside of your comfort zone if you are someone who has a very wide parameter within which you feel comfortable. I don't think it's one or the other. I just think that it really helps to grow your soul to go outside of your comfort zone sometimes. That having been said, I've never done anal and I never will. and so like that is outside of my comfort zone. And
we've
I don't think that I would necessarily achieve greatness or not were I to go there, but that is something that
it's definitely not on my bucket list.
Yeah, no, it's on my fuck it list. Like 100%.
Or but, not fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. But outside of anal, this is why I shouldn't do podcasts. I would say that for me personally, it has benefited me greatly to live outside.
To push
of
yourself
my,
out.
Yeah, my address is not my comfort zone. Like WA.
But were you? Can I ask? Obviously, you know, you obviously a very successful presenter and a radio DJ. I mean, were you looking to break into acting, or was it something that just kind of happened? How did that process actually? Oh. You know, it's the dream for a lot of people. They try to, dare I say it, Brits going to America to crack America.
And I'm going to ask a really annoying question now. Go on. Did you used to say to me that you didn't want to be an actress just in case it didn't work out?
So no. No, no, no. Okay, I'll be completely honest, and this doesn't make me very popular with anyone else who does my job or wants to do my job, but this is the honest truth of it, is that I was an English teacher until I was 22. I was basically engaged to someone. My life was wonderful and easy and simple, and I just didn't... But I was in a lot of difficult situations financially, and I met someone in a pub who thought I was amusing and told me that there was this job to replace Alexa Chung on television because she was moving to America. It was on T4, which is a show that I'd grown up watching. And he was like, you should go in for it. And I was like, oh, no, no, no. I would never want to be on television. I'm very happy as a teacher and I'm about to travel around the world as a teacher. And he was like, oh, it's £1,000 a day. And I was like, cool. Sorry, what was the email? And I never thought I'd get it. But I also thought if I did, they'd fire me within weeks. I'd have £3,000. I'd go on a holiday, go to Rome. and so I had this choice between either going to Japan, which I've been working for 3 years towards as a teacher to teach English, and I'd made the cut, I was about to go on that trip, or I could go and do this audition for T4. I made the decision to try for T4. I somehow got the job because I think my complete disbelief in myself and my ambivalence towards it, because I was like, this, I'm not special, no one would ever cast me for this, meant that I was so calm and cool in the, not cool in the sense of actually being cool, because if you know me, you know I'm not cool, my column.
Not terrified.
But I was very, didn't have any kind of air of desperation, which is what I think comes out often, like, because people are very emotionally attached to this industry. So I just went in, I was very calm, I was very myself, and they mistook that for confidence, they gave me, and competence, and they took me on as this new presenter, and I was just afforded so many opportunities at Channel 4. And then after that, I was offered a chance to come and audition for radio. And I went in and I auditioned again. I was like, they would never put me on the radio. I'm a bloody idiot. And a slot came up just at the right time. And they asked me if I'd like my own show. So I work hard within the jobs that I get. But I've also been very lucky in the fact that I've been afforded opportunities. But I believe, to my credit, and I rarely credit myself for anything, part of my success in my life has been the fact that I don't have like a set goal as to what I'm going to do in the world. I think it's good to have like a rough idea, but I don't have like a set goal and this is how it's going to be and I'm going to achieve this by this age and then this is going to happen and this is going to happen.
And if I don't, then it's not a disaster.
Also, like, if you do that, if you just have this tunnel vision towards your life and towards your career, then you miss what's happening on your periphery. Whereas I've always been like a kind of like fisheye view of the world. And so I see all these weird opportunities that come in. I never planned on being a radio presenter or a DJ or a writer or a TV host. I definitely didn't plan on being a bloody actress. And so I think the fact that I'm very open to new things and I don't have a big ego, so I'm willing to fail. I'm open to failure, and I believe that that's how I've learned most of the things that are good, is by being bad at things. I'm not embarrassed by being shit at things, and I'm not embarrassed by my ignorance, because the only way to combat ignorance is to learn rather than pretend you're not ignorant. Hide from opportunities, hide from the possibility of failure, so you never actually try, so you can never actually fail. I think all you do is you just never grow like that. I've grown by fucking up really publicly, and then sometimes, you know, which has been a nightmare to be in your 20s and be in the public eye. But I've made these mistakes in front of people. And I have learned from them as best as I can. I continue to learn, I continue to grow, and I continue to be open to new things that I don't know how to do, apart from anal.
So you are definitely disagreeing with Rachel here.
I'm not disagreeing with her.
I think what you're saying is, I think it's perfectly fine for you to be within, if you're happy within where you're at, then there's no, because I think what she's basically asking, at the moment, I think there's a very
broad question.
Well, I think at the moment, I think there is a big trend for you should never be really comfortable where you're at.
There's a lot of bullshit Instagram memes that are like, you know, if if it's easy, then it's not worth having. If you're not scared, it's not. And I think that kind of vibe is freaking people out who just want to have a nice job. And
yeah, I was very, very happy. I was very happy as an English teacher with my boyfriend at that time. And if life had gone on like that, that would have also been absolutely fine. Yeah. It's just that I think rather than that question, the way I would pose it is you should never, ever let your life ever be governed by fear.
Yeah.
I run at my fears.
Yeah.
And I just try them. Because what's the worst that can happen? If death is not the other option, if they're not going to take you out into the street and shoot you, then why not? What's wrong with being a bit embarrassed now and again?
Yeah. I'm with you. I think there's you know, it's a terrible thing to let...
All things that your boyfriend will say next time he wants anything.
Yeah, I'm sure. Embarrassment is not what I'm afraid of.
I'm with you, though. You should never let your fears or insecurities stop you from taking an opportunity.
Yeah,
I'm with you on
that. That's where
but I think here as well, I think playing devil's advocate slightly is I do think there's a slight... shame nowadays, and if you are somebody who has found a job, a relationship, a house that you're happy in, there's a current sort of energy, I think, where you have to feel you're always striving for the next thing.
Yes.
And I've always said, my friends always joke about it, you know, I'm very happy in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have aspirations of huge grandeur, massive houses, or millions in the bank. If I can basically sustain a life that I enjoy living, what do I need more for all the time? And I think there is this almost like I said, almost shame about basically saying, no, I'm perfectly happy where I am. And if you're somebody who's been in a job for like 5 years, people are like, oh gosh, you've been there a long time. It's like,
how I feel about it is that I honestly think that people who are constantly striving for more and more and more are trying to fill a void with stuff.
Yeah.
And you'll never be happy. And the worst part of getting to the other side of your dreams, as I see all the time in Hollywood, people who are achieving their dreams, the emptiness lives on, and that's when they turn to drugs and they turn to like extreme spending and all these different things. They become very destructive people. I have no ambition. I have no ambition. I'm constantly criticized for it because I'm just sort of like coasting along, trying shit, not sure where it's going to go. I don't think things through enough, which probably is sometimes to a fault. But I feel very satisfied. If this is it, if I just get to do this, now there's no other acting jobs and there's no other bits and bobs and I'm allowed to keep the money that I've made so far, then that's great. Yeah. I don't need an Academy Award. I don't need a clothing line. Like, I don't need any of these things. Like, I've done therapy.
I want to revisit this conversation in 12 months and see which of these things.
Even if I got it, if I was lucky enough to get it, like, I still wouldn't need it. Like, I'm as happy now as I'll ever be. And if anything, I think, like, loads of fame or too much success where you're working in a business or you're a CEO of a company and you'd never get to see your children and you never get to see your husband or wife, you know, or your partner, you know, in those situations, like, I think sometimes so much ambition, there's a reason that billionaires are all fucking psychos.
Yeah.
Like, to have that drive and ambition that takes you all the way up there to the top, you have to give up the whole of your life.
Well, essentially, ambition, I guess, we've talked about this before in the podcast about, you know, lists. You know, sometimes being a list maker or setting yourself obstacles or things to achieve can actually, in a weird way, hold you back and depress you.
And it blinds you from the periphery.
Yeah. And it also makes you feel like, oh, if I haven't achieved that, I'm a massive loser.
Yeah.
You know, so in a weird way, ambition can actually be the same thing. If you had a huge amount of ambition, you're always then giving yourself a hard time for not achieving it.
Yeah.
So
no.
I kind of think.
It's a curly one, isn't it?
I basically think.
Big old curly one.
Ultimately, I think if you're happy where
Rachel
you're at...
Rachel smashed it with this.
Yeah, she really has. Yeah. We could do a whole half-hour show on that alone.
We're
Go, Rachel.
We're all lying awake in bed tonight with our eyes wide open, just sort of like looking a bit freaked out.
But look at yourself. If you feel like you don't have enough, really look at yourself first. Yeah. Before you look at your life, look at yourself. Look at like who you are, what you're doing. Get some bloody therapy and then figure out who you are and what you really want. What I want is to be happy, to be loved, to have great friends, and I'd like enough money to shop at Whole Foods because I'm a bit of a wanker.
Full stop.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a lot of money to shop at. Yeah. But basically, I'm very happy in the is it just me middle. Thank you very much. You know, aren't you, Jen? Who needs more?
Well, I mean, it's probably a good thing that we're happy in the middle, right? That's kind of where we are right now.
Oh, trust me, like, I am surrounded by people who are at the top, like, way, way, way higher than me. And, like, I'm yet to really find someone truly happy at the top, honestly.
Embrace the middle,
honestly,
Rachel.
Honestly, don't believe what you see on Instagram. It's bullshit. They're all neurotic and mad and being used for their money and their success. They can't trust anyone. They can't go anywhere. They've got no privacy. All this nonsense that people aspire towards, it's because no one tells the truth about what it's really like. Not that I know what it's really like. I've never lived up there, but I know people who live in that situation. And it looks like hell. Mm. No, like, never.
Just
never
keeping
should
up
anyone
the pretense.
Want that.
The middle is where it's at. End of.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Is it just me that feels violent rage and my sort of veins in my neck bulging if anybody deigns to forget my name?
Well, Luke.
What was your name again?
Yeah.
I feel like I need to give it some context.
We had to do that.
I'm not saying, like, you know, the first time you met me, but yeah. I've had experience with the people where, you know, sometimes I know you know my name, but you just can't be bothered to remember it. Or
can
they
I
almost
just say,
use
I think,
it.
I think I actually did get the name wrong of the lady I said hi to.
Oh, sorry. But the irony
so
is not
sorry,
lost.
Because I was
any
so
of
excited that someone recognised me from the podcast that I was a bit brain blind.
She's apologising already.
Excuse. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've there's this school of thought, isn't it? When you meet someone, if you say their name five times, it's a bit like Candyman. You'll never forget it, apparently.
Yeah.
But maybe because I'm good with names and faces, so maybe therefore I have a little less sort of patience for people that aren't.
Right.
But I guess, yeah, I do find it a little bit exasperating when people
don't
remember.
No, I
don't
give a shit.
What, if someone doesn't remember your name?
No, because I'm really bad with remembering names, so it just makes me feel
and it's
assured.
Not because, it's not because I don't like or respect people that
I
forget their names.
I never forget faces, but names. Ooh, terrible.
Also, like, we meet so many people.
That's
I meet
what I think.
So many people on a day-to-day
basis.
Maybe
you're just really forgettable, James.
I think that's the problem. But
totally.
You know, that you hit the nail on the head. That's what's actually happening in the conversation in my head. What happens is I take it to a totally mental place. Mm-hmm. When somebody forgets my name, rather than just thinking, oh, that's a person that's bad with names, I go, oh my God, I'm a forgettable person. I've got no personality. I've made no impression whatsoever on them. You just have this entire, like, internal... I sound like a lunatic.
I
know.
Literally, no one... People still don't know that I'm not Connie Huck. Like, honestly. Like, they still
but
don't know.
But that's casual racism. That's
that is casual racism. You know what get a lot of? I get a lot of Jamelia. And actually, this was very awkward. There was one day where this was very awkward.
Where she said lots of awful things.
She said a bunch of really dumb shit on Loose Women about how, like, plus-size women shouldn't be able to shop on the high street because they shouldn't be encouraged in that with, like, bad eating habits. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
You can Google it. It's everywhere. And then she was also talking about very skinny women also not... Basically, using shame as a method to approach one's, like... eating relationships and, like, mental health problems surrounding food.
And you
got sometimes
the social media stick for it.
And I woke up, so I didn't know about any of this because I was living in Los Angeles, so I just moved to Los Angeles. And I woke up in the morning, and because of the time difference, I woke up to, like, at least 138 tweets calling me a cunt, specifically. And I was like, I mean, this is a little bit more than normal. slightly above the norm.
Responsibility for about three of them.
Yeah, I never normally go above an 11 a day. Yeah. And I was like, God, this is really excessive. And so, I'm sorry about my language, but this is literally what happened. And so, I was like, what have I done? And I because I've normally done something.
Yes, okay. Was there a part of you thinking, this is my fault?
Immediately I was like, God, what have I posted? What have I done?
I appeared on Loose Women in my sleep.
Yeah, who overheard one of my conversations? Yeah. But anyway, the point is that I Googled it and I saw her, like, really careless comments. I don't think she's a bad person, but, like, seriously, that with great power and great visibility comes great responsibility, and use that, like, wisely. And so I just started forwarding all the tweets to her. I was like, another one for you, mate. At Jamelia. And then wrote a piece to kind of fully make sure that A, I hugely stood against what she was saying, but also to make sure that I was separated from that narrative, because I thought it was so dangerous and so against what I'm about. And then I ended up actually bringing out a plus size clothing line.
And you are Jamelia, not Jamelia.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamelia.
It's a different name.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this a lot. I mean, people think I'm being really, basically a wanker when I get really a bit pissed off and people call me Jamie.
Right.
But to me, that's a different name. James and Jamie. It's not even an abbreviation. Jimmy, they're abbreviations of James. Jamie is a different name. And it, people are christening Jamie. And it just kind of winds me up. And I know it's ridiculous.
You're very intense.
I've got real issues with names.
I have to tell you what happened to me. I was at the Paris Eurostar one morning, and I got there at 6 o'clock in the morning because there'd been a fire in the tunnel and there was very few trains, and I knew I had to get back to London. Fashion Week, station flooded with fashion journalists, including one, I'm not going to name her because she gets cross about things and I'm scared, but she's slightly older. She was she couldn't walk very well. She had a bad leg, and we were all sort of in the state of confusion, and I said, I'll tell you what, if you look after my bags, I will go and find out what's going on if we can get on this train. And she said, thanks so much. And by the way, this is my assistant and this is Lucy. And I said, no, I'm not Lucy. I'm Joe. And she went, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I confused. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Of course you're Joe. I was like, anyway, went off. Went and sort of like, okay, I've got us tickets. She went, oh, Lucy, thanks so much. And it's just, it just kind of amuses me.
Yes,
it doesn't bother me at all.
That would have wound me up, you see. I just think, like, literally, are you Dory from Finding Nemo?
No,
where is your memory
attention?
I
genuinely think it's passive aggression. I think she just wants you to know that your name isn't... And I just find that amusing.
Well, I think that's
I had a co-host on Channel 4. Who I won't name, who does that a lot. Well, she'll reintroduce herself to someone every time she meets them. Every single time she meets them, it's a power move.
Well, as in she'll say her name?
Yeah.
Well, see,
she'll just be like, hi, I'm this person.
Right. See, I think
every single time, and like, she'll have seen that person the day before.
Obviously, all of my insecurities around this whole forgetting name thing does feed into I'm that person. So I assume no one remembers me now. So if I have met somebody 5 times, I will always say, oh, hello, I'm James from, you know, and they go, I know who you are. And I'm a bit like, I always assume people are going to forget me, and I think it's always
better. I just don't think it's a big deal, but I also I'm now wondering if you're one of those people who gets upset when people forget your birthday.
No, that's
okay,
right.
Good.
I'm not a birthday.
God, I hate those people so much. Not that I would hate you, but I'd judge you behind your back.
And call me by the wrong name.
No.
People who get obsessive about their birthdays. That's a whole other podcast.
It was years ago. You were born years ago. Like, if I'm here and I'm your friend and I listen to you when you're sad and, like, I take you to places with me and I think of you all the time, it doesn't matter if I didn't remember the day that you were bloody born, which I wasn't there for.
Totally agree.
I think you have to choose one or the other. You can't be a wanker about your birthday and your name. You have to be a wanker about one or the other. Otherwise, you're a hateful person.
I don't think you're a wanker. I think you just have to decide how much you mean to yourself, and that has to just be above whatever. Like, I mean more to myself than it matters how I mean to anyone else.
I think she's hit the nail on the head, because in the story I told, I don't care what this woman thinks.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't care if she knows my name or not.
And the truth is, I've answered to way worse than James before.
Haven't we all?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to get over myself. So it's just me then, basically.
On this day, I'm sure there's people who resonate.
Well, if you agree with me, by all means, do drop us a line.
What's your middle name? Let's see if I can remember it.
Oh, how do you not forget?
I don't know. I've never been told your middle name.
James Conrad Williams.
Oh, God, yeah, that's true.
Because that makes the James and the Williams. James and Williams is so boring. Conrad kind of elevates it.
Yeah, I did forget that.
I know. See, there's no hope for me, is there? Joe forgets. No one's going to remember.
He's leaving. He's actually walking out right now.
Right, James Conrad Williams.
That's my name. Don't forget.
Jamelia.
Whatever.
Jamelia Alia Jamil.
Jamelia, that's hard to say. Jamelia Alia Jamil. Is it just me, Joanne Marie Elvin, who needs professional help to sort my life?
Yes.
Yes.
This is something that it's a source of great disgust with my husband in the house at the moment, in that I have hired somebody to help me declutter my wardrobe, my cupboards, my whole house, because I feel like, I think that I'm going to be really deep now. I think that there's something going on with me with having had the same job for the last 17 years. Mm. And I'm in this real phase of trying to force myself to let go of lots of things. And so I'm fine. I've got, you know, boxes of magazines, old clothes, you know, decades old clothes, and I can't emotionally bring myself to declutter as much as I need to. Mm. And it's a huge problem in our house. So I've drafted somebody in, paying them a small fortune, to stand over me and make me
force
do it.
You. Well, but the thing is that any different to paying a personal trainer to kick your ass at the gym? You
exactly.
Know? Ultimately, and you're not alone, because let's be honest, I've recently noticed, especially on Instagram and just from general sort of web search, you know, there's loads and loads of people that now building these companies and these providing these services where they basically come and sort your life out. So there's clearly a massive demand for it, and you're not alone. I'm a little bit on the fence with it, because I have to say, for me, it's almost a bit like that's the therapy. So for me to physically do it myself, for me, then makes me feel like I'm really doing it and I've kind of achieved something. And it's also that because I don't have, going back to what we talked about earlier, because I don't have an incredible amount of ambitions or hobbies.
A very memorable name.
Or a memorable name. Yeah. I mean, you know, the one really memorable, forgettable thing, the memorable thing about me is that I love to get rid of my own crap. No. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So I actually find, in a way, it's setting those small things like, right, I've got to have the wardrobe detox, or I've got to, you know, sort out that under the cupboard.
I think I've been to your house. It's lovely and bijou, and you need to keep it organized. I think you may be underestimating the scale of what I'm dealing with here, and I'm going to write about it soon, because it's unbelievable.
But also, you've lived in your house quite a long time as well. I mean, I've not been in my place that long, but you know, I do think that the world is divided into people who do take, I think, they find it very hard to let go of things. I mean, we had Nigella Lawson on the podcast, and she said she's a terrible hoarder. Like, she literally can't get rid of anything.
She's a terrible what?
Hoarder. Sorry, be very careful how I say that. But yeah, she basically said the same thing. And I think
we don't need a legal problem here.
I think, hello, Nigella, because I know you're listening.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, I think I've always now been that person that if I don't get rid of it there and then, I know I will hoard it. So I've become slightly ruthless.
What about you, Jamila? Do you hang on to shit?
This is how I feel about what you're talking about, which is that we are all so overwhelmed and anxious in this world. And if you can afford to have someone help you in any way in this world, do it. Mm. I think the weird British pride that exists around, which I've definitely been susceptible to when I was younger, of like, I must do everything myself. I must not go to a therapist because I can deal with all my problems by myself, and I don't need someone to clean my house, and I don't need to, like, just shut up.
Yeah.
Like, just, if you can afford, if you're lucky enough in this life.
I do feel a bit first world problems.
No, fair enough. Yeah. But like, it doesn't have to be a problem. If you're lucky enough to have someone, like, God knows that like the restaurant industry is booming in London and in the UK because people don't want to cook their own meals all the time. Like, it's wonderful. Fast food is on the rise. Uber Eats is on the rise. Like, all these different, can I say a brand? Sorry, not a brand, but like, you know what I mean? Delivery services, like everything, everyone loves someone to do their laundry for them, dry cleaning. All these different services exist. Like, you're really lucky to have done so well in your life that you can afford to have someone come in and help you with something that you find emotionally and physically challenging. Mm. You've got kids, you have a job, you have a marriage, like, you should be so lucky as to have someone come in and help. It's like the weird shame around having nannies or like night nurses when people have kids. Like, but when someone can afford to have a nanny and a night nurse, that person gets to spend more time with their partner or getting on with their life, which means they get more sleep, which only ever aids your life and your marriage and your sense of happiness. We should all be so lucky. And anyone who judges you for what you do is just sad because they're not
I mean, I think you've actually...
Thanks, Jamila. Yeah. That was the best... She's good at giving pep talks.
But also, I think you're right as well. I think there are things as well that, you know, people tend to think, oh, that's what, you know, famous rich people have. You know, you think, oh, famous rich people have trainers, they have chefs, they have, you know, this, they have people come around and declutter their houses. And I actually, that's not the case anymore. I think, you know, I've actually noticed in the last couple of months, you know, since I've had a bit more time on my hands, but lots of my friends, my male friends, are actually quite clueless when it comes to shopping. So they will now actually, they think I've got... You know, I can actually go out and help them. So they physically need to be told what to buy. And they've said, they've told me they will pay me to do that. And they have no shame in that. So what...
Charge them.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I'm saying, that's basically a personal shopper that you would think is a big old Hollywood thing to have, right? But I think more and more people actually want that kind of advice. And if it's affordable and they can afford it, what's the shame in doing it?
No, there's no shame. Like, I think English people just have like we just love to shame each other all the time anyway about everything. No. Like, oh, you have ambition? Shame. Oh, you're doing well? Shame. Oh, you've got some new shoes?
It's really
shame.
True.
Like, it's so in our culture, like the way that I've really noticed it. Like, God knows, I love England. I love the English. I love them so much. These are my people. But I have, having spent time in other countries, realised that we have a real sickness to us in our like need to like douse each other in shame and in, you know, I don't know.
There's that thing about the English, the British, I should say. We don't like to feel like anybody's not grounded. We don't like
like it's like the biggest fear. Yeah. Like you see it, like for example, like any like musician does well around the world, and it's like you know we suddenly rip them apart.
The tall
or
poppy.
even my favourite one is that you can ask any woman. Any woman in England be like, you can just say to her, oh, that's a nice dress, and she will instantly, without any provocation, just be like, oh, I just found this in a bin. It was only like, oh, it was covered in sick, or like, oh, I only got this for like 2p at a charity shop. Like this instant justification of like, oh my god, it's not designer, it's not special. I didn't spend money on myself. I didn't think I was worth spending money on myself. Yeah. I'm not a wanker. Like it's just like this sort of like tirade of just like of explanation, self-explanation comes out.
On that
we have to tell you the price of everything.
Where's your suit from?
Oh, my suit is from Hebe Studio.
I don't know that one.
It's like a new, it's like, I think it's like an Italian brand. Mm. Costs like 600 quid, which is the most I've ever spent.
It's right nice.
Yeah. It is very nice.
No, I would love to say it's not, but I think that they deserve a little shout out for like, it's very nice.
Yeah.
It's very nice. I think you're right. We're basically, I think as a nation, we, as Brits, we need to stop being apologetic for things. And I think you're right. We just need to own it. Like I said, if it's not crippling you financially, it's your money, it's your life.
Yeah.
You should be allowed to do whatever you
want. I have a theory,
want.
By the way.
Oh yeah.
On why we're so apologetic.
Why?
I think this is a systemic part of our culture because we're so sorry about everything we did as a country, as history. I mean, I say we, like I was one of the countries that got conquered and they stole our tea and our curry, but, because I'm from India, but you know the English, like our history is that like went to other countries. America exists and is no longer Native American because the English, Christopher Columbus came over, we took over and we raped and we pillaged. We did this so in so many parts of the world, and we lost and we got sent back to our tiny little island. And I think that there's like a inherent embarrassment and like we're so sorry. And I think it's almost kind of like the lady doth protest too much, where I think that we're like constantly trying to lower ourselves and be sorry and humble because we tried to conquer the world, which was bad, and then we lost, which is worse.
I'm not touching that.
There could be something
sorry.
In that.
Sorry, I'm not saying that's definitely. It's my theory. Yeah, I'm not saying that as you know, gospel. I'm just wondering. You know.
I think as an outsider to this country. I think it's well, because I'm Australian, I didn't grow up here.
Yeah.
What really struck me when I first got to this country, and still continues to, is the obsession with class. Mm. Obsession.
It's so funny.
The British, this country, talks about class more than anywhere. And of course class exists in Australia, of course it exists in America. Nobody talks about it in the same way. And I think that there's something in that kind of, that everybody's sort of like entrenched in their pride.
Mm.
Slash shame with
yeah
class.
It's such a rigid it's, identity here
and
I think,
everyone has to have their place in society and you shouldn't try and get out of your box and again it plays into what I was saying earlier. It's the tall poppy syndrome in the UK, isn't it? If somebody gets a bit too above their station, they love cutting them right back down again.
Instagram is very interesting for what it's done to the English, where it's kind of like set us free to have kind of like these moments of rebellion where suddenly everyone's becoming really like they're narcissists now.
Taking selfies.
Everyone's getting their lips done and their arses done, and like everyone is
being
kind of
sexy,
like conforming, being a bit sexy, being a bit out there. I've got English friends who use the expression without any sense of irony of like, I was just really feeling myself at the moment. I was like, what? What did you just say? But then there's a tiny part of me. Yeah, it's a tiny part of me that's just like, oh, I'm just feeling my bum hole right now. No. There's a tiny part of me that's also kind of like, oh, well, you know what? Good for you. We've been so repressed and, like, forced into self-hatred that, like, you know, while it sometimes brings out the ugliest in people that we love, there's also a part of me that's like, this rebellion was coming.
Yeah.
This was always going to happen.
Instagram is like
point.
The emancipation of the British.
It is. It is where we're like living for likes. We want likes. We want pride. We take pride in our appearance.
We're hashtagging like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, we're showing off our lives rather than being like, no, I haven't done anything this weekend. Now it's like, you do things only to be able to put it on the gram. You know, we're motivated by showing off now. It's such interesting rebellion.
And I'm really conflicted about how I feel about
it. It's monstrous.
Thing.
It's monstrous, but it's also important.
But basically, going back to what you were saying, no, I think it's perfectly fine, you know, to get someone to come and sort your life out.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Whether it's your mind, your body, or your wardrobe.
I forgot that we were talking about that.
But just saying, it's perfectly fine. If you're paying someone to come and sort you out,
well, I'll tell you what.
If you can't sort yourself out, pay someone to do it.
I had a meeting with her today, and I'm very excited about how clean-lined and sophisticated my shitstorm of a house is going to become. And so I will keep you updated.
Oh, please.
On the gram, on Instagram.
Good for you. May we all have the money and the access in our lives to have people come in and help us when we are anxious and we are overwhelmed.
And give you a fucks, basically. Don't beat yourself up so bad.
What a great way to end.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jameela Jamil, for making time in your ridiculously busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you, Jameela.
And we are so grateful. And I love seeing you because I love that you never change. And, you know, and I bet you don't either. No matter how successful you get.
I'm way too old now to change. If it was going to happen, it would have happened in the last decade.
2018 is totally your year. I'm really excited. And I have to urge you all to watch The Good Place.
Do.
Although I know some of you do.
That's very kind.
Bye, everybody. And do tune in and listen to us next time on Is It Just Me?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.